Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Hey, welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks, everyone. I'm your host, John Lasva. Joining me, as always, are my co-hosts, Mark Hoffmeyer.
So I was thinking about the Triple Lindy from Back to School, and that's a Rodney Dangerfield movie where he jumps off about 8 diving boards and does like that thing where he stretches and he makes a fart noises in his armpits, and his son is Robert Downey Jr. But it's like this crazy dive that Rodney Dangerfield does in the movie, in the movie Back to School. And I was wondering, which Kurt Russell character do you think could do the Triple Lindy?
I think that by accident, that Jack Burton from Big Trouble in Little China would be like sitting up there, like just joking around, like at a pool party at the top. And then he'd like slip and like his butt would hit the board. And then he'd go in the air and do flips and it would go from there, like all by accident.
Yeah.
When I said by accident, I think you knew the exact failing up Kurt Russell character I was going with, too.
Yeah. What about you, Laz?
I think all of them, really. I think there's a backflip hidden in all of them, so I don't know.
I'll tell you who's not doing it. Kurt Russell from Poseidon.
No. He's falling off and breaking his neck and then falling. No, he's going to his daughter's at a pool party and he's mad about it and she runs up and he chases her up there and then he dies.
Yeah. See, if it's his daughter's pool party and he has that elaborate of a diving board set up, then that was Kurt Russell from Furious 7.
I want to see Captain Ron do it. I just want to see him. Like, it would be total. Like, I think he wouldn't slip. Like, he wouldn't. Like, Jack Burton would slip and fail up. Like, Captain Ron would be like, he would just say, oh yeah, I can do this. I know exactly what I'm doing. And he would just bounce all over the place, land it perfectly, be like, I meant to do that. You know, yeah. I think Jack Burton would admit, like, people would be making fun of him. He's like, yeah, all right. But I think Captain Ron would, I think he would pretend like he knew what he was doing.
Captain Ron would do it to impress the mermaid.
Yeah. He would land on Kurt Russell from Poseidon.
The Kurt Russell from Fast and Furious 7 would do a backflip, then pull out a bucket of Coronas.
He would drop him off before he landed in the water. Like, Don would be on the side mumbling, like, quarter mile. And then, like, he would flip past him in the air on a diving board and hand Don a bucket.
John Lovegood, how many backflips can you do consecutively?
Boy, you know, I mean, if you asked me about 15 years ago, I could say one. Now, not so much.
You could do maybe, like, half of one, maybe, or, like, a quarter. Of a backflip.
Yeah, but the problem is that when you do half a backflip, you land on your head.
I mean, it's the thought, it's the effort, right? That still counts.
Sometimes, if you land wrong, then that's the last time you tried to do a backflip.
Yeah.
I think I could do like an eighth of one, just land on my butt.
Right. Hey, speaking of unsuccessful backflips, let's try to answer some listener questions.
Good segue!
Yeah. Mark, I think you got questions for us this week, right?
Yeah, I do. And this comes from the Facebook page. And this is from our old friend John Galligan. And he asks, which three characters would you pick to go on an adventure for lost gold?
Okay. I only picked characters who were actually involved in gold obtaining missions where the people weren't interested in the gold. So I chose Dr. Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark, right? Bilbo Baggins, ooh. Desolation of Smog. He got through the worst of it, right? And Rick O'Connell, that's Brendan Fraser from The Mummy.
Ooh.
So that way I've got my warrior, my sneaky thief, and then my wily thinker.
I like it.
Wow.
And, by the way, were you thinking of the movie Sahara when you posed this question?
I was mostly thinking about The Mummy and Rick O'Connell.
Okay, because when I saw the question, the first thing I thought of was, oh, Matthew McConaughey, Steve Zahn, and Penelope Cruz.
Yeah, that'd be a great threesome. But I was actually thinking about taking Smaug, but like once we got to the gold and a leprechaun, but like once we got there, they wouldn't want to give it up. So
Smaug and a leprechaun, that's great.
But they wouldn't give it up. So like, I don't know. What do you got, Lazva?
Well, actually, Loving Good, you actually kind of took two of my choices, actually. Brendan Fraser really? And Harrison Ford. Yeah. I guess they were bound to be like really popular choices, but I'll stick with Indiana Jones just because like you wouldn't really want anybody else on your side when you're hunting for treasure. I think maybe what's his name, Gadget from the Goonies or whatever, like
Data.
Data. Yeah,
Data.
I think he'd be good to have around, right?
Yeah, well, he'd be great.
Let's see the third one. I don't know. I want to say Brendan Fraser, but I just can't.
Do you want me to go through my three, and then you can pop yours one if you think about it?
Yeah.
All right, so I had Rick O'Connell, but I'm going to change that because I had a backup. So I'm going to do Captain Ron. I'm going to do Lara Croft, Tomb Raider, and I'm going to do Nick Cage from National Treasure.
Oh, that's a good one. Ooh.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, you need a lot of luck when you're hunting for gold, and I feel like Captain Ron has that in spades, right? Lara Croft, like, she has, like, the technology, and, like, all, like, the people that work with her don't really die. It's just the people that kind of turn on her that die. And then Nick Cage, like nobody dies that's with him. Like his assistant stays perfectly alive. And he always ends up like everything that could go your way goes your way. Like Nick Cage, like in the first National Treasure, they need some lemons and they open up a refrigerator door in John Voight's house and there's lemons in a bowl. And like there's a scene where they need water and they all have bottles of Evian on them, like perfectly. So, or like, I don't know, Aquafina, whatever. So, like, you have the billionaire, you have the guy with the luck, and then you have the person that just has, you know, every time, oh, I need a shovel. Hey, look to your left. Like, you're finding that gold with these three.
Yeah.
So, those are my three.
Nice. I don't know. I guess for my third one, I'll just go, like, Scrooge McDuck.
I'd like to see Scrooge McDuck, Gollum, and the Leprechaun team up.
Oh my god, that would just be hilarious. You found the goalie, he just kind of dives right in. Like, how does he do that?
Smaug.
Smaug.
I like that. I don't know. No matter what they say about The Hobbit, I just think it's a beautiful $700 million trilogy. And I bought the Battle of the Five Armies extended cut, the R-rated edition, and the extra carnage is amazing. Like, if you guys are down, like, just watch, fast forward to the battle scene at the end, and there's like some really great moments that were crazy R-rated that were cut out.
So is that cut actually rated R?
Yeah, a rated R.
Oh, I must have it.
Yeah, it's really good. And like, there's one character that I hated, and like, he has a great payoff in this one. And I mean, it's just like R-rated, and the dwarves actually get more action. And like, it's violent. It's Peter Jackson. What you love about him. So, my next one is, I guess this could lead into a Peter Jackson question: is what cinematic beast would you not want attacking you?
You know, I'm not going to say that this is the most menacing of movie monster beast things, but the first thing that actually came to mind, it wouldn't be my pick, but it is the first thing that came to mind. So I'm kind of going with the Stay Puft Marshmallow Ghostbusters thing here. It's just the first thing that came to mind. And that's, they have a cave troll. That line has haunted me and my cousin Ryan for over a decade now, and we love it so much because you just know you're in for a bad time. But if I was going to go with something that me and my crew wouldn't be sticking around to fight, I'd pick some like the bridge troll from Troll Hunter.
Ooh.
That thing was big, and it knocked the crap out of that guy, that like park ranger troll biologist.
I love that scene though in Fellowship of the Ring where Sean Bean looks out and those arrows almost hit him. He moves his head out of the way and then he kind of looks out. He's like, he says it right. They have a cave, but he says it kind of annoyed, like they're in for a thumping.
Oh,
oh my! Yeah. What about you, Lazva?
I have to go with the tree from the first Evil Dead movie. I would not want to go toe-to-toe with that. I mean, no. I feel pretty confident taking on a tree if I had, like, a flamethrower, but I just I wouldn't want to risk like defeat, if you know what I mean.
That tree would give you a tree root colonic.
Yeah, that would, that would not be pleasant.
I'd be feeling splinters in places I never knew I could get splinters.
And it's not going to be gentle.
No.
Yeah, for me, I wouldn't want to be attacked by those creatures in the descent, because if they do attack you, that means I'm in the cave system somewhere, which is already terrifying for me. So you're being attacked by a primal, no nonsense, doesn't care. You know, it's not going to be nice to you. It's not going to accept token gestures. It's going to, and it has no weapons. So if it kills you, it's going to like do so by, you know, ripping your eyeballs out and like your flesh and biting you and like making you bleed a terrible bloody death while under the rocks with no hope of getting out.
You know, I'd still prefer that over what happens with the tree.
I need to give a very different kind of answer. Whatever those creatures were that Han Solo had on that freight ship in episode 7.
Yeah.
Whatever those creatures were, I don't want to be attacked by them, because if I'm being attacked by them, it means that I'm in the stupidest, most gratuitous, convenient scene in an otherwise very entertaining, decent movie.
Yeah.
That yeah. scene could have entirely been done away with. Those monsters had no business being there.
Oh, hey, we pressed the wrong fuse.
He could have just as easily been delivering some kind of rare spices.
Yeah.
We didn't need those stupid creatures.
You know what? I think more great spices need to be smuggled.
Telling you, man.
I think we're missing out on some great spices.
Dune was all about a spice.
All right, cool. So, yeah, those are our two questions. And thank you, John, or Galligan, for sending those our way. So appreciate it.
Nice.
Very festive set of answers for such a simple, blunt question.
That's right. I love it.
All right. Thank you once again for those awesome listener questions. Love and good. I think you have the main topic of the day for us today, right?
Yeah, actually, you know, about 2 weeks ago, I was asking some of my friends for listener questions. And one of my friends came to me and he said, well, do you guys have a list of, you know, the best revenge movies? And I said, well, that'd probably be a whole podcast. And so I just decided, let's pick some of our favorite revenge movies or revenge moments from movies that aren't necessarily revenge movies the way we think of it, and talk about them to please my friend Ty for giving us this idea. And so I don't know, I think revenge comes in all forms. I mean, the first thing that came to mind, and I didn't use it as a pick just to give an off-kilter example, would be the airbags that Zac Efron sets in The Neighbors for Seth Rogen. Like, that's a good revenge scene, in my opinion. Is the alpha guys have the upper hand.
I thought you were talking about Zach Braff for some reason. Then I started thinking about him in some movie that he was in with Patrick Bateman where they were playing jokes on each other.
No, but me, I have my small man crush on Zach Efron, so.
Yeah. No, I just thought that was funny that, like, I was like, Zach Braff?
Seth Rogen? Like, are you talking about an episode of Scrubs?
Yeah, I'm like, what, did I miss something?
But so I'll kind of get this little train started, and I'm going to pick what really is purely a revenge movie, and I'm picking Payback. And Payback had Mel Gibson playing Porter, which ironically is a word for a door guy, kind of a lower guy. I don't know if that was intentional or not.
Or a delicious beer.
Or a delicious beer. I don't know if they were treating him as a delicious beer with the rough life he was having. But like, in this movie, the whole movie revolves around the fact that at some point he was doing something for this crime syndicate, and he gets stiffed and left for dead out of his cut of this money. And the money was 140 grand, so his cut was 70 grand. And through the whole movie, all these super rich mob bosses and all of like their middle management and all their grunts keep saying, he's just doing this for a measly 140 grand. And he keeps saying, 70, it's 70 grand.
Yeah.
He's just going through the ringer.
I pictured him like the kid from Better Off Dead, who kept yelling $2, like I kept $70,000, $70,000. And it's like, you know what I love about Mel Gibson is he has this great detached thing, so he can kind of be an anti-hero because he's so detached from, like, remember Lethal Weapon? Like, he has like this weird quality where he can be the bad guy, but you can still kind of like him. And I think he's really good in this. And then I also love watching. I think he, aside from like early Bruce Willis in Die Hard, he gets beat up. His reactions to getting beat up are some of the best because he just acts really annoyed about it. Like that scene
he's suffering, but you know he's been there.
Like there's that scene where, I forget her name. Lucy Liu. Yeah, she pulls up and goes, hubba, hubba, hubba. And then he gets behind this car and like this look on his face while he's getting dragged. The car's going in reverse and he's on the back of it. Just the look on his face is just annoyance. Like he's just not happy about any of it. And I think that's great in like a revenge film. And then he has this unhinged quality where he murders a lot of people. And like, you're just kind of like, I still like him.
he went about it in different ways and enjoyed it. Cause when he found the guy who stiffed him, he was using Lucy Liu as his, the guy who stiffed him was using Lucy Liu as his dominatrix call girl. And so Mel Gibson has the gun on the guy and he lets Lucy Liu is this like total sadist and she starts beating the shit out of the guy in front of him. Like, I mean, there's that. And then there's like these dirty cops beating him up and this Weasley little underground casino lackey who gets his and all levels of criminal. There's the triad. He shoots James Coburn's like alligator skin luggage and he's like, that's just mean, man. They're all different levels of like just like sticking it to somebody in this.
And there's that David Paymer's pointing a gun at him, then he just takes a gun from him.
That was the little Weasley guy, yeah.
And if you're looking for a good doubleheader, this was originally the source material was a book that was a Western, and then it got translated into Point Blank, and then it became Payback. But if you watch Point Blank and Payback together with Lee Marvin, and then you know watch Payback, like it's a great revenge doubleheader. Kind of both same source material. So I don't know. And Payback's one of these movies where the director's cut came out, the cut wasn't right. Like it has an audience. It's developed kind of a cult.
I think the director's cut though is awful. Okay. It's a totally different movie. It's almost a different story, but I'm sorry to say, like, I despise the director's cut, and I love the theatrical cut.
Interesting. It's like Cyborg. Which is a revenge story.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's hunting down the people that killed his family.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I totally forgot that. That's right. Yeah, it is. It's absolutely a revenge story.
Ooh.
Jason, you need to win. Elizabeth, what's your first pick for revenge movies and themes?
This one's a classic. Yeah, it's classic. A lot of people regard it. So it's the Clint Eastwood film, Unforgiven. Right.
Oh my gosh, I love that movie.
Yeah,
that movie was like unforgiving to its audiences. Like you're just watching, you're just like, oh man.
Yeah.
Like.
So, an Unforgiven, Clint Eastwood plays a kind of retired old gunslinger, William Money. Right.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah. I think. So the local town prostitutes, you know, one of them get like kind of disfigured by like two castaways or whatever, and they put out a bounty like on their heads. But like the local sheriff, played by Gene Hackman, was like, "No, like I'm not having any of that. I don't want any vigilante justice in my town." And basically, it's a showdown between William Money, Clint Eastwood's character, and Gene Hackman's character. And the final scene in Unforgiven, it's just one of the most brutal, most visceral, most satisfying kind of vengeance scenes I've ever seen in my life. You know, I probably kind of butchered like the build up to the scene, but there's really no way for me to describe it like fully without like, I don't know. It's just an amazing
scene. It's almost like anti-violence because it's just so stark and real and like ugly.
And really simple, like, yeah. You know?
It's not like glorified at all. And like, this is like what, the number 68 on the AFI top 100 of all time list.
Oh, yeah.
Like this is like an absolute classic. It's like a revenge, bloody, dirty movie, but it's brilliant.
Yeah.
I was reading up on it when you told us you were going to do it. And like, it almost makes me like tear up thinking about this movie because how good it is. I'm weird. But,
nice.
You know, it's like, yeah, I love this movie. It's, and I think I think it's, does that make sense? Like anti-violence?
Yeah, because Clint Eastwood's character, like, he wanted to give up that way of life, and he did after, you know, after he got his revenge on Gene Hackman. But yeah, the whole movie is just him, like, you know, he had given up that way of life, and like he was trying to do like this one last job, but he just didn't really want to do it until, you know, when push came to shove, and like he actually, you know, returned back to that lifestyle very briefly. It was a very brief second, but, you know, in those few seconds, it was just like very, very brutal. You know, just like, ooh, you kind of understand why he wanted to leave in the first place.
And they killed Morgan Freeman.
No, oh, yeah, that was the main motive for revenge, really.
They murdered Morgan. Morgan Freeman doesn't die in movies.
No.
That might be like his only cinematic death. I don't even know.
Like, I mean, yeah, you just don't kill Morgan Freeman, right. And he was killed in this movie.
Yeah.
But you know what I love is, you know, there's like these rare horror movies that sort of transcend the genre of horror, and they're actually like a good film, like Dawn of the Dead. Like, this is like the Western that it like transcends its bloody R-rated Western thing and just became a classic. Like, I love genre movies that are actually great films. Does that make sense?
Yeah. They realize the kind of the meta that they're in and just kind of rise above it. You know,
yeah,
it's amazing.
I'm watching.
That's what Deadpool is going to do.
Say what? So, the movie I got is, you know, we've talked about some really great films, Payback, you know, cult classic, Unforgiven, Oscar winner, Best Picture. This one, I think, is probably one of the best movies of the last 40 years, and that is Jaws 4: The Revenge.
Right.
Featuring all right, so Jaws was blown up in the first one, right? And then the shark in the second one was killed. And then the third one was in 3D. But then the fourth one, a shark kills one of the Brody sons, right? And then Mrs. Brody flies to the islands, I don't know, the Caribbean. The shark swims from Amity Island to the Caribbean in 3 days, hunts her down and her family. And at the end, she takes a boat out by herself. The shark, who I guess his two relatives were blown up. It's like the Hatfields and McCoys, if you think about it, between the Brodies and the Jaws family.
Nice.
The shark wants revenge. So it jumps out of the water. She impales it with the front of her sailboat and kills it.
Okay, as ridiculous as that is, we got to back up a little bit because I haven't seen this movie in over a decade.
Yeah.
Well, at least a decade, because Jaws 4 is about, you know, the least likely Jaws movie I'm going to rewatch. Might have been more like 15 years. So she's up in the Northeast,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And she drives to the Caribbean and the shark follows her.
Yes.
Is that explained in the movie? Well, how the shark followed her? Did it lowjack her car?
Never explained. And it goes from like cold water to warm water. Mrs. Brody has flashbacks from scenes that she wasn't even at.
Like, you mean from the earlier movies?
Yeah. She has flashbacks to the first one when they were on the boat and she remembers everything. It's like, how? Like, there's got to be some like Haitian voodoo going on. And I actually just wrote about the plots of Jaws 5 through 19 on the site. So give that a visit. And I kind of deduced that, Michael Myers, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, they all turned out to be like Illuminati or like this cult stuff. So I'm thinking that like Jaws had some link to Mrs. Brody. But how could he have a link, because the two sharks were blown up beforehand?
And what year was this? Like 1983 or so?
Three sharks have died. And this shark still remembers. And of course, and guess what the son is in the Caribbean? He's a marine biologist. This was 87.
So in 1987, even if this was a super smart deep blue sea shark that was even smarter than the deep blue sea sharks, and it had the best technology available in 1987, it still wouldn't be able to track her, because 1987 didn't have crap for this stuff. Like, I don't understand how this shark is finding her unless he's got like a couple of private detectives following her in some noir, like, you know, cigarette smoke filled car with the windows rolled up.
Humphrey Bogart.
I'm serious. Like, I don't understand how that. So now I need to rewatch this just to see, like, are they really pulling such a big sheet over the audience's eyes right now?
Well, if Jaws is revenge, the tagline is "This time it's personal." Then it says Chief Brody's widow believes that her family is deliberately being targeted by another shark in search of revenge. But who's is this a cousin? Like, is this a brother?
I didn't even know that sharks were so good about their family ties. This sounds like a hillbilly family reunion.
Yeah, it's a Hatfields versus McCoys. It's like, but like, this movie did not win an Oscar. Actually, Michael Caine won an Oscar while he was filming this. And like, so there's a scene, right, where Michael Caine, his plane crashes. He's underwater. He swims to the boat. He's alive. He gets on the boat and he's perfectly dry. And then, but at the end, the shark roars. I just want to let you guys know that. The shark jumps out of the water, roars.
Huh, that's interesting.
It roars.
Hey, all films can have their unfortunate editing issues. There was a scene in Creed where Sly is, like, you know, doing chemo, and he's, like, looks withered, and he has, like, almost no hair. And then it cuts to a scene of Creed training, and Sly looks healthy and black and black haired, and he's got all his hair. And then it cuts back to him being sick again.
Huh. But so you think that's the same mistake as a shark roaring? Someone had to add that sound effect.
No. I mean, Michael Caine getting out of the water.
Okay.
I'm saying, like, they kind of maybe recut something, and then they realized, well, we didn't film that, but I like it better like this.
Actually, I'm noticing a trend. At the end of Payback, Mel Gibson roared. At the end of Unforgiven, Gene Hackman roared. At the end of Jaws Revenge, the shark roared.
The shark roared.
Is this like a revenge thing where people just roar?
I don't know. In my next pick, I don't have any roaring, really. I have roaring crowds.
Ooh.
Because my next pick is Gladiator, the story of Russell Crowe, who basically decided not to be a jerk, was sentenced to death, instead escaped and became a slave. And then when he was ready to give up on everything and in his whole life because he lost everything, someone said that he could meet the emperor if he won the crowd. So all of a sudden he turns his life around. He starts to win just so he can get vengeance on the most delightfully evil Joaquin Phoenix ever.
Now, I have to say, I was watching clips again for this movie, and Russell Crowe is one of the most believable butt kickers in cinema history.
There's no flair. Like, he's just tough.
He's not like a pretty boy, you know? Yeah. He's like a rough and tough type of dude.
Like, his muscles look like they were formed from war. Like, I feel like Russell Crowe spent, like, well, either travel around the world fighting people or train swords, before this. But he looks just like a brick, you know, shithouse. And he's just like he just moves forward and just crushes people. And every time he wins, you're like, I get it. Like, you're never like, you never feel like it's cheating when he wins. Every time he wins a fight, you're like, that would happen.
Look, it's not like Chung Li in Bloodsport is just standing there while Russell Crowe does the biggest, most telecasted jump spin kick ever to hit him in the face.
Yeah, exactly. Like, actually, this goes with my Kurt Russell theory, where I believe Kurt Russell murdering gladiators. I think he could fly on lizards like in Man of Steel. I picture him being a ship commander. I picture him doing, like, you know, war stuff. But when I see him as, like, an everyday schlub, I don't believe it. Like, he's more believable flying on a lizard than he is playing like a dude.
Like, in the next 3 days?
Yeah. Like, oh, gosh. Yeah. Like, no, I didn't believe him at all in that. I'm like, why is he not flying a lizard? Why is he not breaking into the prison with a dragon, grabbing Elizabeth Banks and flying out of there? Like, yeah. So, but yeah, no, I love this movie. I mean, Best Picture winner. Dude, when I was watching it in the theater, the screen died for an hour during the chariot fight. So it, like, wrecked all momentum. But, like, the scene.
An hour?
Yeah. Like, we just sat there for an hour waiting for it at AMC Crossroads 8. And we just sat there waiting for it to turn back on. But at the end, though, the revenge is so, so sweet because he's almost dying. And then Joaquin Phoenix is like, give me a sword. And then that guy's like, no one give him a sword. And then, like, it's just such a satisfying – it's like a And then it's just so kind of poetic. And like, it's like a really beautiful moment where a guy dies brutally.
Yeah, Gladiator is a good film.
Yeah. Like, and that's like another case of an epic about people getting murdered, like Unforgiven, brutally, but it's a Oscar winner, Best Picture.
Yeah, I mean, and if you see the director's cut, you see stuff that wasn't the theatrical release, like where he's crying, touching his son's feet, and his son is hanging. All you see is the feet, but he was hung and burned. Like,
in the director's cut, doesn't he fight a Hoth Wampa? Hoth Wampa. And a Rancor?
I would believe it if he won.
Yeah.
I believe it. Like, even if he boxed it.
Wait, mate. Imagine if you're a gladiator and you're feeling pretty cocky and a Rancor comes out. I'd be like, ugh. No, but it's a great pick. Great, it's like a good revenge film. But yeah, I think what sells it and with Unforgiven is you really buy into the main characters. And then the villains are just so evil. Like, but they're not like over the top evil. Like you said in Unforgiven, Gene Hackman didn't want gunslingers in his town. Then you have Joaquin Phoenix, who's like this insecure kid. So there's like enough menace to them, but then they blend everything perfectly.
You mentioned Gene Hackman. I feel like Gene Hackman was every bit as credible as the bad guy in Runaway Jury as he was in Unforgiven.
Just put him in anything.
Yeah.
Also a good revenge flick, as it turns out.
I mean, he's a great basketball coach. He's a great football coach.
He's a great coach of anything.
Yeah. Really. Life coach.
You could say he was coaching Will Smith in Enemy of the State.
Oh, yeah. He wasn't a good dad in Royal Tenenbaums. He was a good bad dad in Royal Tenenbaums.
Yeah. I miss Gene Hackman. I wish he'd come back.
Jaws 5.
He'd be like,
what do you got for your next pick?
Yeah, I went with this with a classic, another classic. It's a emotional, heartbreaking story of vengeance. I'm talking about Rocky IV.
I swear, I just watched that again, start to finish, 3 days ago.
It was a good movie. So at the beginning of Rocky IV, Rocky's, you know, the boxing champion. He wants to settle down with his family. His friend Apollo Creed decides to put on an exhibition match against this upcoming Russian fighter named Ivan Drago.
Yeah, this young buck.
Yeah. Apollo, like, you know, is into the, you know, he enters the ring with him. Like, he's messing around with him, just playing with him. Ivan Drago is, like, super serious. And Apollo Creed, like, is like, okay, you know. So they ring the bell, and, well, to keep it short, Ivan Drago basically beats Apollo Creed to death right in front of Rocky's eyes. So the rest of the movie has Rocky just training his butt off to try to get his vengeance against Ivan Drago.
Yep, he's doing it in the woods. Ivan Drago's getting tested by all these Russians where Rocky's just like lifting wood.
Yeah, he's lifting wood. He's like running up the snow against like a 80s like kind of a soundtrack.
It's Christmas in the Soviet Union. Yeah, it's like 3 feet of snow. It's cold as sin.
I do have to say College Humor did a 30 for 30 about Rocky IV, and they said that Apollo Creed was in dance shape, not fight shape.
Which is true.
Yeah, it was like a 7-minute dance sequence with James Brown and Showgirls.
An entire song.
It was an exhibition match. It wasn't supposed to be like a real match.
Oh, okay. But who built this thing that drops him down to the stadium? Like,
I want to say it was Apollo himself.
Yeah. And then, like, is the stage is coming out of like from a basement level, right? With, like with Drago in the ring coming up to ground level, like he's just looking around like, what the hell is going on?
And like Rocky caused world peace at the end of Rocky IV.
Yeah,
just so everyone knows.
Just, you know, because he beat the Russians.
It was kind of credibly, like it was so human.
Yeah, I can do it. You can do it.
It was.
I
just
can change.
Yeah,
we all can change.
Yeah, I was just looking at the AFI Top 100, and Rocky IV is number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Oh, nice.
Good. It belongs there.
It just
belongs.
I feel like it was the best motive for vengeance, because Rocky III was all about the building of that friendship between those two, and Rocky IV just takes it all away. I'm like, no.
Oh, God. And then, like, even when they give the weights of the fighters, they're like Apollo Creed weighing in at 221 pounds. And then you like see him standing next to Ivan Drago, like they're right next to each other in the ring. And he's like, and weighing in at 261 pounds.
Oh, man.
Like, I'm just thinking about that, like a 40-pound deficit in a boxing match? That sounds more like a lamb to a slaughter than an exhibition match.
Yeah, never box a Russian in an exhibition match. Like, if you're an MMA, don't fight Fedor in an exhibition match. You know what I mean? Like, he's gonna knock your head off. But yes. I think
friendly exhibition match.
I'm kind of mad that I'm not even thinking. I got my Ivan Drago pop sitting right next to me, and like, you know, my artwork of Rocky IV around the room. Like, I'm kind of mad I didn't think about that.
It was, he had the best line too. If he dies, he dies.
Oh. Jeez Louise.
Jeez.
Yeah, I still can't get over that though. Right before Drago like lands like the death blow in the box in the ring, like Apollo Creed, he kind of looks like Rocky at the end of Rocky I, where like he can't see out of either eye. There's blood all over his face. And like Rocky's about to throw in the towel, and he's just got so much pride that I don't even know how he could see Rocky, but he's like, no. No, and then he gets punched and killed. Like, and Rocky didn't throw it. You better feel guilty. You owed him.
If you're a henchman, you run away from that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
no. Apollo.
Throw eight towels.
No.
Eight towels.
Apollo Creed is no henchman.
Get all the towels.
Get the beach towels. The beach towels.
Every towel.
Just drop them all.
Yeah,
that was a great revenge film, and it just ends with world peace. Like, so many revenge films end with people dying. This one ended with like kind of retribution for everyone.
Well, unfortunately, it left Michael B. Jordan without a fodder. So.
Oh yeah,
I love the soundtrack of Rocky IV, super powerful, and the song that they were playing that was going on during the fight with Ivan Drago at the end. The song is called War. And it is so intense. I love that song. By the way, way back in the 90s when I was doing martial arts, like demo team stuff where, you know, you got everyone doing fake fights and flips and like, you know, weapons forms. Half of the people, even like 10 years later, were using that song for their musical forms.
Oh, wow.
Like, nice. Really, half of the damn... And the other ones were... Like the Mortal Kombat theme.
I think mine would be like... I would like... It would like... This is why I would use it. Because, like, my opponents would be all jacked up. And then I would play, like, The Scientist by Coldplay. And I would just, like, mellow everybody out. Like, you know, my guy's like, my opponent's sitting there all jacked up. It's like, I'm gonna kill him. Then like a really chill song comes out. I would pick out like a song that like makes him depressed, and I would play it during the fight.
Oh man.
Now, we could probably do a whole podcast about Rocky IV, but does anyone have any other gems they need?
Actually, you're Rocky and you're running in the wilderness. Which song would you pick to get you going that extra mile? So for me, this is the most pretentious story I'm ever going to tell. So sorry, guys, but I'm going to tell it. When I was living in Korea, I was running up a mountain, and I had my iPod on a run mix, and I was getting really tired. But I have this Newfound Glory. They did a cover of King of Wishful Thinking, and it came on, the King of Wishful Thinking by Newfound Glory, and it pushed me up the last part of the
song.
Yeah, but like the cover just like put like, you know, reinvigorated me. So now whenever I run, I always have the King of Wishful Thinking by Newfound Glory. That's like my spirit animal song.
I thought that was by Billy Ocean.
No, they did a cover. Glory did a cover. They're like a punk pop band.
Hmm. Okay, I didn't know. Oh, I know the band you're talking about. Yeah, all right.
They do like from the screen to your stereo. But like that came on, and like I was like, all right, I can get to the rest of this mountain.
So I, you know what? If I had Billy Ocean, I'd get to the top of the mountain. I would swim the ocean. All right, we have one left. This better be a doozy. No pressure, Mark. No pressure.
This one won a Golden Globe and for Best Drama recently, and it is The Revenant. And so for me, I watched The Revenant a while back, and while all right, this is going to sound crazy because everyone thinks it's the greatest movie ever made. Well, technically, I think it's beautiful. I do think that it's a movie about like kind of moments. I don't think it's like a narrative as a whole. And like, I would rather watch like a Terrence Malick movie, but this is like the hot revenge movie right now. And basically, I'm not going to, actually, I don't want to spoil it for you guys, but it's just like, Leonardo DiCaprio going against Tom Hardy. And if I had to get revenge on somebody, the reason why I'm doing this is Tom Hardy's the last person I would want to hunt down. Like, it's like, you know, I have no problem hunting down like some Russian. I have no problem hunting down, I don't know, a shark or, you know, a Brody. But if someone's like, hey, who killed my son? Tom Hardy? Ah, crap. Like, and the movie is just like a war. It's like Gravity met The Gray meets The New World. Or like everything that can go wrong will for poor Leo. He gets attacked by a bear, which you see in the previews. And it's a guy getting beat up the entire time while trying to get revenge on Tom Hardy. And it's just like, I don't know, it's beautifully filmed. It's one of the most like ambitious movies you'll ever watch. It's a crew killer. I would hate to work on it. But that's what we're finishing on. And The Revenant.
So I haven't seen this movie, so just based on what I saw in the trailer, I was just assuming this was the story of a bear taking revenge on Leo DiCaprio. Like, I mean, because I haven't seen the movie. I don't know the details of the movie. So maybe like these guys are like fur trappers or something, right? Like, yeah, maybe, yeah, they were out for bears and they found like a juvenile aged bear, and they're like, well, we can't sell a rich guy a whole bearskin rug, but we can make like a bath mat out of this, like, this bear cub. And so then this is the mother bear coming back and shaking Leo around and like trying to get vengeance on Leo. Like, that was the revenge movie I had in mind.
Yeah, it takes, yeah, it, I mean, that bear definitely gets revenge. It's being a fur trapper is the worst job on the planet, hands down. This movie's weird for me. I understand how beautiful it is, but in no world is it best picture.
You know, I'm kind of – well, it looks good. It looks beautiful.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's amazing to look at. It's eye candy.
You know, underneath all that fur and all that hair, like the shaggy hair and the beard, like, I don't know what Tom Hardy I'm getting. Like, if I was going to take revenge on, like, Inception Tom Hardy, I wouldn't be that worried. But with my luck, after you shave him, give him a haircut, and get his shirt off, I'd have like Dark Knight Rises Tom Hardy, Warrior Tom Hardy, or Lawless Tom Hardy on my hands.
He's basically like Lawless Tom Hardy met Mad Max and was illiterate and a fur trapper and missing hair. Like, he's basically just like this cockroach. He's a survivor. He takes the worst jobs on the planet, but he just keeps like plugging along. Like I said, he's the last guy you want to have like revenge against. So, have you seen The Revenant, John? Elizabeth?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so it's kind of a weird movie for me to bring up, but I don't know. Watch the movie. I think it's beautiful to look at. I think it's just basically a movie about moments. Yeah, and then you see there's a weird cameo, though. Like, in the background of one shot, you see Liam Neeson fighting a wolf.
Huh. From The Gray.
Like, it's the same Liam Neeson character from The Gray.
Yeah, and then you go by this cavern, right? And you see Anthony Hopkins and Alec Baldwin chilling up, like, evading a
from
bear.
From the edge.
Yeah.
And then in the background, do you see a scruffy Brad Pitt fighting a bear with a knife?
Yeah, and then you keep going, and Missy Peregrine from Backcountry is up on a tree with a bear attacking her. And then if you watch closely, you'll see a bald bear attacking John Candy.
Ooh. Oh, from Great Outdoors.
And then if you're looking, you'll see Luke Wilson losing both of his arms to a bear from Anchorman.
Oh, right.
I mean, they pack a lot of stuff in this movie, and it's like an art house film. But you're like, wait, is that Luke Wilson?
So did Leo DiCaprio kill the bear in the movie, or did he just get away?
Do you want spoilers?
I just want to know if the bear lived.
Well, this really doesn't impact the movie. Yeah, he does.
He kills the bear?
Yeah.
Okay, so in The Revenant Part 2, what's going to happen is that there's going to be this, like, bear cub that, like, sees now living Leo DiCaprio in some settlement. But Leo DiCaprio is like, I see that bear cub. He's coming after me. I'm going to move to Detroit. So he books a plane ticket. He's a vampire or something. He waits like 100 years so that planes exist. He gets a plane ticket all the way to Detroit, and the bear just knows where he is. So the bear hoofs it to Detroit in 3 days and starts killing off his family.
That'd be awesome.
It's called The Revenant Bear's Revenge.
It's like Only Lovers Left Alive, the vampire's there, but it's Leo, and a bear attacks his family.
Since it's a bear, instead of Jaws Revenge, it'll be Paws Revenge.
Ugh. Ooh. Like, nice. What's Kill Bill, where Uma Thurman looks at Vivica Fox's kid, and he's just like, she's like, when you're ready to come after me, I'll be waiting.
Yeah.
So maybe, like, Leo says that to the bear. The bear waits a long time, then attacks him in Detroit.
Nice. Well, of all the places to be attacked by a bear, why not Detroit?
It would be, like, the worst is, like, that's fine if you're at your house, but imagine, like, sitting down at a cafe with, like, a nice coffee and a pastry, and then the bear attacks you. Like, that'd just be so...
That's a really inconvenient place to be attacked by a bear.
Yeah, it's like, hey, man, let me finish my croissant.
Like, you don't even have a steak knife at your table.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you have, like, a little tiny, like, espresso cup.
I would splash whatever coffee I had in one of its eyes. Yeah, I know, you're done.
Well, I'd be pulling a Joker. I'd be throwing baristas between me and the bear while I look for sharp objects. I'd slam a travel mug in like the bathroom door and hope that it had a sharp edge.
Just nice. So basically, bears, if you're trying to kill me, just let me finish my breakfast.
Right. Oh, I think that is a sufficiently zany end to our discussion of revenge theme movies.
Nice. I think I feel fully satisfied from all the vengeance we dished out today.
Oh, yeah. Fully avenged.
Right. All right. Well, before we sign off, do we have any plugs you want to make or any unrequited, like, vengeance wishes we want to throw out there?
Just head over to Movies, Films, and Flicks. Listen to our podcast. Read our reviews. If you don't like it, don't seek revenge on us.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you do write bad comments, we pull a Jay and Silent Bob and we buy plane tickets, show up at your door and beat you up. Not really. That would cost too much money.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can listen to us on Blog Talk Radio and you can find us on Twitter, Movies, Films, Flicks with an X and MFF Horror Corner.
Yeah. And then head over to Shark Dropper. You'll love everything they do.
Yeah. We have like 10 podcasts, including this one. A little bit of something for everyone. So, yeah, I think that just about does it.
Kurt right. Russell.
Yeah. From my co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer.
Kurt Russell times two.
Yeah. John Levengood.
Pause the revenge.
I've been your host, John Lostwood. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.
T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! Go! Go!
This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.